Birth, Volume 3, The Gathering, Chapter 28. Mr. President, I just got off the phone with Agent Smith. The Joint Chiefs want to meet with you in the communications room. They have an update, said Hadid. Okay. I was just working on what I was going to say at the wedding tonight. I've never done this before, said Riker as he slipped his feet into his dress shoes by his desk and laced them up. Neither have they, Mr. President, said Hadid with a small smile as he stood in the doorway. I suppose I can't mess it up too bad, but I still want to be perfect, said Riker. The two men made their way through the secure vault door and to the elevator door. It was a long wait for the elevator deep underground. Riker tugged at his jacket and buttoned the center button and snugged up his tie. It seems like years we've been down here. Waiting, hoping. I can feel the planet changing, like the air is different or something. I keep thinking that with each passing moment, the planet escapes further and further from the Nephilim trapped on that Earth. Time is on our side. We just have to survive, said Riker as the elevator doors opened to the third floor of Building E. You know that no one makes it out of this alive, Mr. President, said Hadid. Then, what's the point? Asked Riker as they walked forward through the lobby where they had fought General Gabaris' assault team not so long ago. Endurance. To endure to the end is the goal, Bob, said Hadid, stopping him before they opened the steel door to the communications room. Your people have been waiting for thousands of years for this moment. I'm new to this, said Riker. You are far from new, my friend. You are chosen. Many are called, but few there be that choose. Thank you for choosing, said Hadid, extending his hand. To the very last breath, Hadid, said Riker as he firmly gripped his hand. Good morning, Mr. President, said Admiral Donetti, standing to salute him. The other men stood to attention and saluted him as he entered the room. These men, dressed in their dress uniforms with their medals and ribbons and stars, looked at him with eyes he had never witnessed before. The room felt like it was vibrating as he brought his feet together quietly and saluted them. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for asking me here. Let's be seated and talk for a while, said Riker as he watched them lower their arms and wait for him to sit down. I've asked these two tech sergeants to work the screens for us. I have something to show you, said the Admiral. Did the gravel road work? Asked Riker. They attacked above Western Europe about 7 hours ago, said General Bainbury. Any casualties? Asked Riker, almost afraid to hear the answer. The best we can tell. The only losses were 150 ships and their crews, said General Smart. So it worked, said Riker. They won't be fooled again. We lost communication with our radar stations on the moon about an hour ago, said Smart. What's next? Asked Riker. If I was running ops, I would refuel the looking glass and head for the next target zone, he said. How much time do we have? Asked Riker. It's about 12 hours to reposition, Mr. President, he said. I can have missile batteries ready in North Dakota and Wyoming, he said. No, I don't want to lose anyone that way, said Riker. I can set them up on an automated launch, he said. But Riker looked at him with calm eyes that meant he was not authorized. Hadid, is Lorraine here yet? Asked Riker. She should be arriving in a few minutes. Wedding arrangements, said Hadid, leaning back against his hands on the back wall with his eyes on the door. What about Smith and Jones? I need some tactical minds here, said Riker. On their way, Mr. President, said the Admiral. Well, let's wait a bit before you show me what you have. In the meantime, could you provide me a status report on the population? Did we move people away from the coasts? And are there enough shelters for the refugees? Asked Riker. We started to move about 45 million people, but by the time they arrived at the tent cities, we only had about 7.5 million, said General Bainbury. What happened to them? Was anyone hurt? Asked Riker. Not more than normal. There were a few traffic accidents. But it seemed, as the separation progressed, the crowds became more orderly and peaceful and smaller. They just disappeared. My MPs are reporting complete calm at the Nellis and Mountain Home facilities, said Bainbury. So we're as ready as we can be, said Riker. Hadid answered the knock at the door and let Smith and Jones into the room. Good morning, Mr. President. We got here as quickly as we could. I saw Lorraine on the road down by Building A. She should be here shortly, said Smith. Good morning, agents. We were discussing the current refugee conditions, and the Admiral was about to give us a status report. We'll wait a few more minutes if that's all right with you, gentlemen, said Riker. Mr. President, I have been giving some thought to your strategy, began General Bainbury after what seemed like a long minute. I confess that I have seen too much war. I am surprised that I am still here with you, to tell you the truth, but I've held the hands of the dying more times than I want to remember. I thought for a long time that my job was to make the other guy die for his country, to quote another famous general. I just wanted to say that I think you're right about all this. For the first time in my life, I understand that there comes a time when losing is the only way to win, he said with an uncharacteristic smoothness to his voice. Thank you, General, said Riker, leaning back in his chair for a moment. A soft knock was heard at the door, and Hadid pressed the maglock and opened it a crack with his other hand behind him, then opened it wide. I came as quickly as I could. Other important duties, said Lorraine, a little flushed in the face. Are we secure, Hadid? Asked Riker. Yes, Mr. President, he said. Admiral, the floor is yours, said Riker. Excuse me while I take off my jacket. Sergeants, will you raise your right hands, please? You are hereby upgraded to top security clearance status. Do you accept the responsibility that you are about to see and hear will never leave this room, so help you God? Asked the Admiral, hanging his jacket on the back of his chair. Yes, sir, said both men. Access the file in front of you with the code Alpha Tango 5 9 7 pound right arrow zebra, said Donetti. The file is open, sir, said the first sergeant. Put the file on this screen here and make it a slideshow. Mr. President, at approximately 1800 hours our time last night, three very large spacecraft approached our planet from the moon and fell into a stationary position about 30,000 miles out, in orbit over the English Channel. Change slides. They deployed a smaller armada of 150 ships in formation and launched an attack on Western Europe. Change slides. Best we can tell with our ground-based optics, the front ships were pulverized by Operation Gravel Road, and their ordnance exploded, starting a chain reaction that destroyed the entire attack force. These next two slides were taken about 3 minutes apart. No one in those ships survived. Change slides. The three space carriers retreated at 2300 hours and headed for a new position under impulse power. Change slides. They arrived and became stationary at 0700 here over Midwestern North America, said Donetti, laser pointing on the screen. They've been there for 4 hours? Asked Riker. Yes, Mr. President, said Donetti. What are they waiting for? Asked Riker. Looking glass, said Donetti. It's hard to exactly tell. They probably refueled after the first wave was destroyed, which for a 747 takes the better part of 2 hours air-to-air with two KC-46s. They carry about 27,000 gallons each and can dump about 1,200 gallons per minute. They would then be about 11 hours away from Detroit, which is where they should cruise to provide command and control for the attack, said Smart. I'm not sure I understand. Why does Looking Glass have to be controlling the same geography on that world as they are attacking on this world? Asked Riker. The best we can tell, the two worlds are synchronized in their axial revolutions, which makes sense. As long as they command operations from the North Hemisphere. They could use HARP to bounce their signals off the ionosphere, said Smart. Okay, so that would put them in position, ready to conduct their attacks at about what time on our world? Asked Riker. That would make it roughly midnight tonight, when they are formed up, if they follow the same attack plan, said Dinetti. Is there anything we can do between now and then to counter their attack without actually using force? Asked Riker. Actually, Mr. President, that is not exactly the way to look at it, said Lorraine. I am completely open to suggestions, said Riker, placing his hand on his chin defensively. I assume Operation Gravel Road was a success, right? Otherwise, we would be discussing massive casualties in Western Europe, asked Lorraine. It was more effective than I thought it would be, said Bainberry. Like a million little buckshot pellets effective, said Smart. Well, that was force, sort of. We placed obstacles in their way and then covered the objects with radar jamming. It was sort of like the art of war, right? Said Lorraine. Subdue the enemy without fighting, said Dinetti. Exactly. Has anyone asked Kyle what he thinks about the situation? Asked Lorraine. Well, no, we did not, said Dinetti. Smith, can you get him down here, like pronto? Asked Lorraine, looking at Riker, who pointed his finger at Smith. Come on, Jones. Let's round up our mad scientists, said Smith, heading for the door. I'll go to the lab and you go to Bailey's. They're going to be one of those two places, I'm sure, said Smith. What if he's not there? Asked Jones. Meet me on the street, regardless, in front of Building B, said Smith. Roger that, said Jones, breaking into a jog as the elevator doors opened on the lobby floor of Building E. Smith began jogging for Building B, where the lab was located. With his collarbone still not connected to ligaments while it healed, he could not swing his loose arm to run fast. The soldier handling the door opened it before he got there, so he didn't have to slow down until he got to the elevator. He waited for a couple of minutes until the elevator arrived and got in alone, and was soon in the lab before the double doors. He could see the lights were on and couldn't miss the enormous frame of Rhino through the airlock window. He cracked open the door and poked his head inside. Hey, you two. I need Kyle, front and center at the radio room in Building E, said Smith with his field voice. Kyle raised his head up from a large junction box he was constructing and smiled at Agent Smith. Hey, Agent Smith, what's up? He asked. We need your genius ship at the Joint Chiefs, said Smith. Like now? Asked Kyle. Okay, Rhino. Why don't you take the rest of the day off? We got a wedding to go to anyway, said Kyle. You the man, Kyle. I'll see you on the street later, said Rhino, turning toward the airlock. Smith made room for him to kick off his booties and put his shirt on over his white t-shirt. Okay, I'm at a good place. Let's just go talk to a bunch of generals, said Kyle, wiping his hands off with a shop towel. He let the airlock door close behind him and took off his smock. He slipped out of the government-issue boat shoes and into his street shoes. Within a minute, they were walking for the elevator. I should let you know that Operation Gravel Road was a success, said Smith. No shit? Like, what is a success? Asked Kyle. First wave of 150 ships wiped out. Chain reaction after the ships on point exploded. No escape, said Smith, as they walked briskly out of the double doors of the lobby and onto the walkway toward Building E. I suppose they bombed the equipment on the moon, said Kyle. You got it, said Smith. The elevator ride was short to the third floor of Building E. The lobby was still secured with no one present, and Smith knocked on the door. Hadid cracked it and let them in. Kyle, thanks for coming on such short notice. I want you to hear what Admiral Dinetti has put together, and given the success of your last low-tech solution, help us brainstorm, said Riker. You bet, Mr. President, said Kyle, picking a seat. Kyle, can I help you at all? Asked Lorraine. Like I could turn that down. Hook me up, said Kyle, settling into the chair. Admiral, if you could just give me a minute, said Lorraine, as she walked over to stand behind Kyle's chair. She placed her hands on his neck and rubbed gently up to his temples and took his glasses off. Kyle closed his eyes, and a soft and calm smile came across his face. "Kyle, can you hear my voice?" "Oh, yeah," said Kyle. "I want you to focus on this room and use it as a launch place for what the Admiral is about to show you." "Do you need your glasses?" asked Lorraine, looking for a sign he had made his unique connection. "No, I'm fine. Let's have a look," said Kyle, opening his eyes. "Admiral, he's all yours," said Lorraine, straightening Kyle's hair and sliding her hands off his shoulders. Admiral Donetti ran quickly through the slides again, and Kyle remained quiet. He didn't tap his fingers or think of a tune in his head. Lorraine could see by his motionless feet that Kyle was bilocating with the information he was seeing. "We believe that the next wave will occur before midnight tonight. We need a solution that fits our rules of engagement," said Donetti, glancing quickly to Riker and back up to Kyle. "The carriers are not human?" asked Kyle. "We believe they're local, but they're not ours," said Smart. "You mean like another race living on Earth besides humans?" asked Kyle. "That's the best guess we can make," said Smart. "So that old Vedic stuff was real?" asked Kyle. "Kyle, try to focus on a solution," said Lorraine. I am. But I didn't think they could use alien stuff against us. That's cheating, isn't it?" asked Kyle. "The Nephilim found a way to use the ships, but use human pilots," said Donetti. "Far out. I mean, that would be cool, to fly one of those babies. Okay, here's the thing. They can't land here. Their stuff won't work," said Kyle. "What do you mean?" asked Donetti. "The electrons. I mean, their circuits are based on high-frequency electrons. That's almost impossible here. The metals on this world are heavier. I mean, the electrons are heavier. They're muons, so the math is different. The electron shells are smaller. So the photons are different. DC works okay, but the higher-frequency AC stuff, it's having fits. I've been working on it since our test the other day. If they drop anything that requires electronics, it will fall like a toolbox off the back of a truck," said Kyle. "So their missiles may not explode," said Bainbury. "If they don't burn up in re-entry, they will act like meteors, and they could still contain radioactivity," said Smart. "If Harappa was any indicator, they are plenty hot," said Bainbury. "What's a Harappa?" asked Kyle. "It's not a what, it's a where. 25,000 years ago, the inhabitants of a city named Harappa were wiped out in a nuclear attack. The bones of the dead are still glowing," said Bainbury. "And these were the guys?" asked Kyle. "We think these ships survived. But if history serves me right, they were the losers of that war," said Smart. "The losers? What the hell were the winners doing?" asked Kyle. "Best we can tell, they were using some kind of gravity weapon," said Smart. "What the hell? Gravity is a badass weapon by itself, but to wield it on purpose? That is so cool," said Kyle. "It appears they sunk two entire continents under the ocean, cracked the crust wide open, and swallowed them up," said Bainbury. "Well, I mean, it wouldn't be cool to use it like that. I was thinking more like space travel," said Kyle. "Well, that's why the losers have been sitting on the ocean floor for 25,000 years, and the winners are nowhere to be found. Thank God," said Bainbury. "Who's in command?" asked Kyle, changing subject suddenly. "Kyle, we believe that a being called the Nephilim is running everything. Actually, he may have been for a long time, as it turns out," said Riker. "Oh, I know about that guy. I want to know who is commanding the attack force. Is he up there?" asked Kyle, pointing at the ceiling. "Lorraine, you want to take this?" asked Riker. "The Nephilim may have come here with Lucifer, with ancient man, and waited for Adam to arrive. We have fought them for millennia, but now they use the greed of men to rule the world, or at least that world. He has a general running things from a looking-glass aircraft over the Midwest of the other world, said Lorraine. How's he doing that? I mean, the plasma zone between the worlds is like the mother of all bad connections, said Kyle. They're using HARP, said Donetti. You mean the sky heater? Asked Kyle. It's a network of ionospheric heaters, actually. They shape the upper atmosphere and then use it like a giant parabolic dish to direct their signal around the plasma zone, said Donetti. Far out. I mean, I always thought that thing was for using the weather as a weapon, said Kyle. There was some weather research with the program, said Donetti, sounding defensive. Hey, you don't have to play with me, Admiral. I saw the 1997 documentary Holes in Heaven. I know what the program can do. But wait a minute. Now I remember. Isn't there some kind of wicked downside of using HARP too much? Asked Kyle, pointing at Smart and Donetti. That's never been confirmed, said Donetti, looking at Smart for some help. No, dude, I remember. Using HARP charges up the ionosphere. That's why they named it auroral. When the beam charges up the ions in the layers, they release that energy by putting off light, like artificial northern lights, except they're like purple, said Kyle, smiling. Lavender. The radiation is in the shorter wavelength, lavender wavelength, said Donetti. Right, lavender. So if the overdose effect is real, then the major downside might be too, said Kyle. I don't know what you're talking about, said Donetti, backing off in denial. I do. I see where he's going. The civilian scientific study called it a solar tap, said Smart. That's it. Like a humongous lightning bolt out of heaven, said Kyle. You mean that is actually possible? Jesus Christ. Your little weather project had a chance of destroying everything and you still used it? Asked Bainbury. Spoken by Mr. Kill-em-all-and-let-God-sort-em-out, said Donetti. Tell me that wouldn't have worked more than a few times, barked Bainbury in his familiar, gruff tone. Gentlemen, please. Let Kyle make his point, said Lorraine, trying to stop the bickering. I'm just curious. Whatever is on that world is on this world too, right? Asked Kyle. I see where he's going. General Smart, do you have a team holed up near the North Slope? Asked Donetti. I can find out. Why? Asked Smart. Look, those guys have been jacking their atmosphere up for a couple of days now. If we can send a muon signal back to their ionosphere, it might create a mode of destructive interference, said Kyle. Wait a minute, gentlemen. Is this an attack on that world? Asked Riker. Not exactly. It's more like a peaceful message of hope, said Kyle. What does that mean? Asked Donetti. Look, I am sure those guys are doing the same thing they did in the Gulf War. They laced that shit with negative vibes, man. Let's send a Christmas message or something back to them, said Kyle. Like they would even be affected by it, said Smart. It's the thought that counts. And in the meantime, our signal rocks their jingles, said Kyle. Okay, kid. I'll make some landline calls and get back with you. If it's possible, do we have the authority to commence, Mr. President? Asked Donetti. Riker sat up in his chair and scooted the wheels closer to the table. Let's consider it a go, but let me know when you get ready to fire it up. I have something in mind. Dismissed, gentlemen. And don't forget, you were all invited to the wedding of the year tonight at 8 p.m. on the street. And lose the uniforms for one night, will you? Said Riker as he rolled his chair back from the table to salute them one more time.